You know, danger sharpens. That has been my mantra for a long time.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Twice a week, we will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, at Base Camp in Boulder, Colorado today. I have got Justin Ching in the house. Justin joining us from Los Angeles, California. Justin, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
I am, and thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you on the show. For those of you that don't know Justin, he is an award-winning showrunner who has produced hit series for Amazon, Fox, YouTube, currently the supervising producer on Amazon's Ritual. I know you began your career with YouTube Originals, launching channels like Vice, Awesomeness TV, Tastemade. You've led the Fox Facebook partnership to produce At the Buzzer. Your background's extended into comedy series like The Fighter and The Kid. You've done docuseries like Z-Dream, and have also been featured in Forbes and named to the Asian American Journalist Association list of inspirational figures for Asian Pacific Heritage Month. Beyond all of these different accolades, you've got a lot of heart, it seems like, from the conversations that we've had so far, and really are on this mission to empower underrepresented groups to tell their stories in their own voices. And I know you yourself are a bit of an artist as well. So excited to dive into all these different themes on this segment. Welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps that I might have left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's chop it up. First of all, I want to say thank you for reading that whole thing because it sounds like a very long brag. And I appreciate you covering off on all of that. I'm still, and this is something that, you know, I talk a lot about when I speak on panels or when I speak even smaller groups is, yeah, I'm still trying to feel confident and comfortable a lot of times in these contexts and overcome my imposter syndrome when I talk about my career, because, you know, looking back now, I've been in this business for a long time. You know, I've been in this business almost 10 years, and in Hollywood years, you know, those are like dog years. So, you know, in a sense, I should be able to stand tall and not feel insecure in a sense when I hear things. But at the same time, when you hear someone else's voice sort of reading back your accomplishments to an audience, you're like, ooh, like, did I do too much there? Did I say too much? Did I, you know, do I come across too much like a braggart? Which I hope I don't, but that's sort of the double-edged sword in nature of the business, right? Is like, you have to be able to sell yourself. And at the same time, as an artist, you're trying to be authentic. And I think that sometimes those things are competing.
Yeah, I love that you talk about this imposter syndrome piece. You know, I myself, there's so many times where, you know, whether it's on panels or talks and you hear your bio being shared and it's like, is that really me? Like, did I do all those things? And in a lot of ways, I don't know if this resonates for you, but it's like this experience of just being in motion and moving. And I just like find myself, I'm often just doing stuff without reflecting on like, whoa, that happened. And yeah, like that happened. And somehow like you wake up and it's like, whoa, now I've gotten here. And, you know, I find for myself, like I always am such a student of learning and growing that my work never really feels like it's done. And so I'm just so committed to that path that even like pausing to reflect. And, you know, it's something that I hear from a lot of our listeners, like being able to embrace your success while also have the confidence, yet also the humility to really be like, I'm still a student. I'm still learning. I've never quite made it. And so it sounds like that.
Yeah. I totally get that moment though, when you're like up there on the panel and they're reading stuff and you're just like trying your hardest not to turn bright red as they're reading this out. And you're like, God, I hope they're not taking any photos of me like in this very moment, because I probably seem like mortified at a point in time where I should look excited to be there and look like I'm ready to, you know, enrich the audience as opposed to worry about myself.
Totally.
It's a very real moment that happens, because you're sitting there like hearing someone speak to a microphone while, you know, 100 people are looking right at you as a reactor, and you're like nodding, you're looking back, you're like, wait, should I be nodding? Because I don't want to make it seem like I'm like, yeah, those are my accomplishments. Nod. Yeah. You know, pat myself on the back, but like, yeah, like, how else do I engage? Like, do I look around?
It's Totally. I know. I had this interview with Trevor Hall, who's one of my favorite musicians and becoming a friend of mine here in Colorado. And there was a moment in the interview, it was in person, and he started like playing guitar and singing next to me. And I'm like sitting there and the camera's on. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. And I'm like totally feeling starstruck because he's amazing as a performer. And I'm like looking at my sister because she sees me. I'm like totally losing my shit, but trying to keep it together.
Yeah, you killed it. I heard that one. It was great.
Yeah, thanks. But it was moments of humility. And for all of our listeners that are tuning in right now, like this is what it's like behind the scenes. And if this is something that's up for you too, like it's normal, you know, it's like part of the human experience. And I love just being able to riff on it, you know, and just embrace it.
And I think you don't ever want to lose sight of that too. You know, I think that a big part of being in this business, right? And let me take that a step further and say, if you become a professional storyteller and you end up doing the things that fill you with a sense of wonder for a living, that all started from a place likely when you were a kid and you saw something happen and you were just like, that is the most amazing thing in the world. I want to be doing that. Like, how can I be in that? And I don't think as a kid you see those things, I hope not at least, and you say, wow, like those are the dollar signs. Like, I'm going to make a ton of cash. You know, like I think even, you know, in hip hop, we talk a lot about like making the money, you know, it's a lot about that is a very fundamental and elemental feeling of this sort of rags to riches story. Like people are coming from a place of poverty or of humility, and they're associating money with wonder more so than they are like the purchasing power of money, you know? And I think that that's one of the things that for me in this business, like I don't ever want to stop feeling nervous. Like I don't ever want to stop feeling that sense of blushing when people are talking about you, because I feel like that's when you start losing your edge. Cause like then everything has either jaded for you or you've become, you know, so confident in your beliefs that maybe you're overconfident. You know, no filmmaker I respect, whenever I've heard them speak, whether that be Spielberg or Joss Whedon or, you know, even Tarantino, I don't think they sit there and they think that everything has gone right. You know, like Francis Ford Coppola, famously after they shot The Godfather, one of the greatest movies of all time, you know, he thought it was a mess. I mean, he thought it was going to bomb and that he would never work again. And, you know, thankfully in this thing called filmmaking, you could fix it in the edit. And sometimes you're onto something, you don't even really know how powerful it really is. So I say, like, you know, it's important to overcome the imposter syndrome, because as I think as a person of color, and I think anyone representing any underrepresented community, you know, you need to not feel like you don't deserve to be there, because people your whole life and the institutions have been built to kind of keep you out in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you need to not lose the luster. And I think that's so hard to do sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So good. You know, like the theme of even just the wonder and the awe of it, and just like the experience of like feeling that. And just as you're saying that, it's just like totally resonating with me. And even being like the critic of our own art, and even, you know, for our entrepreneurs listening, like our businesses, that, you know, sometimes it's like you can't even see how great the gold that you have inside of you or what you're creating until it gets outside. And I know with my music, it's been one of the biggest edges where I'm like, oh my gosh, like I hear the song back and I'm like, oh, this is so terrible. Like I can't release it. And I just sit on it. And then it lives in the world and people are like, oh my gosh, like that impacted me so much. And it's a lot of what, you know, I hear you saying. And really, I think we all have this opportunity in so many ways to just like put ourselves forward and put our ideas forward and put our expressions forward. And really being like, yeah, it's part of it to feel the critic and the imposter syndrome. And it's an even bigger part of it to just be a yes and show up anyways. So I love that.
And I think filmmakers and entrepreneurs are kindred spirits in a lot of ways. Yeah. You know, like they both have to self-start something, believe an idea that has a high risk and high reward. And although the mechanics of what happens behind the scenes might be slightly different, they're also both very technical processes. You know, on one side, you have to code an app. On the other side, you have to write a script. And there's a lot of challenges, I think, to on both sides of those, you know, and the way they unite for people like myself who are founding their own production companies and trying to both both be independent filmmakers who know how to work with the big studio systems, big network systems, as well as be able to invest in smaller projects that you just believe in. You know, a lot of the times I turn to my friends who are in tech or are founders in other disciplines of business and ask them, like, what do you think I should do? You know, it's not a creative question. It really is an instinctual one in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so good. There's like so much more I can say on this. And I wanted to transition a little bit, like, you know, for those that are hearing you that don't really know much of your background. You know, we said a little bit in the beginning, like you've worked with some of these major networks like Amazon, Fox, YouTube, done these different projects. But if we were to go back in time a little bit, like be a mm-hmm. fly on the wall for you in your earlier years, like seeing you like growing up in high school, like did you go to college? Like what would we have seen along the trajectory? Like I imagine the Justin in this moment probably wouldn't have been the Justin who you thought you'd be at like 12, for example. And so I'd love to know, like if we were like a fly on the wall, like what would we have seen and, you know, a little like a sprinkle of highlights to get the world of who you've become.
God, I hope I've matured since I was 12. Sometimes I look at myself in the mirror and I just don't know.
Okay.
My favorite example of that, by the way, is sometimes I'm eating Funfetti cupcakes and I think to myself, man, have I never outgrown rainbow sprinkles? Will I ever outgrow rainbow sprinkles? I hope not.
I hope not as well. More play and fun, please. We all could use it. Yeah.
Look, for my roots, you know, for me, I came from a remarkably unremarkable place. I grew up in a place called San Bernardino, which unfortunately is most known recently for, you know, mass shooting a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And once you dig beneath the surface of that, it's really a mundane place, you know, is the way that I would describe it. My hometown is best known for Amazon shipment centers, truck stops, and literal rock quarries. As in, like, when you pull up in your parking lot and you see that rock cement bar on the ground where you park, like, that's built in my hometown. We have stacks of those you pass by the freeway. You know, the biggest landmark in my town is a NASCAR track. And if you think about, like, as a person of color growing up in that environment, you know, there were a ton of folks across the spectrum. You know, I grew up with folks who were in Section 8 housing as well as trailer park trash. Let me say that again. That's pejorative. I don't want to say it that way. But yeah, I grew up with, you know, African Americans who were living in Section 8 housing, as well as blue-collar white folk who were living in the trailer parks. And they were all on my bus stop. My bus route started at the bottom of the hill and ended at the top. And the top of the hill wasn't anything that fancy. I mean, anything I see here in Los Angeles on any given day is 10 times more fancy than anything I experienced growing up. You know, I was sort of the minority within the minority. I was an Asian American in a neighborhood that was built on middle-class African Americans, middle-class black folk leaving Los Angeles after the Rodney King incident. People who were literally fleeing the LAPD because they didn't want to live in an environment anymore that was in that police brutality state. Latinos who cover the spectrum, whether that be migrant workers, because there's a lot of our agriculture still out there, at least when I was growing up, as well as, you know, folks who are upper middle class Latinos who really ran a lot of the business and power structures in the city. I mean, they really just covered the spread because it was a California rural town. Yeah. And then a lot of what we would now call the left behind white folk, you know, a lot of redneck country white folk who I think would actually even be proud to call themselves that, right? Like I grew up in an environment where like you use redneck as a point of pride, not as a pejorative term. And, you know, the fanciest restaurants we'd go to were literally like the Bass Pro Shops. Like the Bass Pro Shops had the best seafood in my hometown. If you didn't know this, Bass Pro Shops actually has a restaurant in the superstores.
I didn't know that.
You did a little, lot of hunting and a lot of fishing, and you dropped a lot of your G's growing up. And again, this is in Southern California.
Yeah.
This is, you know, without traffic, an hour away from downtown. And of course, if you've ever been to LA, there's a lot of traffic, so that's not the case. But we're talking about a place that most people just pass by on the way to Vegas or Palm Springs. And so for me, like growing with an environment, I really do mean that like I feel like I came from nowhere. I didn't come from nothing. You know, I had a wonderful mother who really busted her ass for me growing up. You know, I never felt like we had a bad life. I always felt like we had everything that I felt like we were very rich. And I mean that in the total sense, not the economic sense. Like I felt like I had a lot of love and a lot of laughter growing up and a lot of nice things when I needed them, you know? And, you know, yes, like were there drive-bys? Absolutely. Were there drive-by shootings, I should say. There were drive-by shootings, you know, people broke into our house. But I never felt like we live in a bad environment, even though if you look at some of the current stats on San Bernardino, you know, there's more murders in San Bernardino last year than West Chicago. And West Chicago has become like sort of murder capital of the USA.
Yeah.
But Common and Chance the Rapper and Barack Obama are not talking about San Bernardino. And so, you know, for me, like, I think that that helps paint the picture of two things. One, you know, to go back to my mother, like my mom, I learned a work ethic from her that I feel like can only be seen. You had to experience it along with her. You know, one of my earliest memories as a kid is when I was in the car seat in the back of my mom's car, like we would be driving and we would get to a red light and she would turn around and be like, okay, Justin, remember, mom's going to close her eyes for a little bit. So you got to wake me up when the light turns green.
Wow.
And the light would turn green. And I'd be like, mommy, the light's green. And sometimes she wouldn't wake up and I would be kicking her chair to wake her up. And I don't want anyone to misconstrue that at all for her being irresponsible. Like she was a single mom trying to do the best that she could. And the reason why she was so tired is because she was working till 3 a.m. every night. You know, she was a woman of color who owned her own professional business. And that's the reason why we moved out to that area in the first place, is because it's the only place where she could afford a business like that. And at night, you know, I would be going to bed as a teenager, where you think that, you know, most of the times you stay up late as a teenager anyway, but she would be like up later than me. Like I'd be going to the bathroom in the middle of the night at like 2 a.m. and I would see her light on and I would walk over to her room and see her taking a nap on the floor because I knew she and I knew it was a nap because she was like in all of her work clothes still and had slept on the floor as opposed to the bed so that she would wake up when her alarm went off.
Wow.
And she'd be working till 3-4 a.m. every night, and then by 6:30 the next morning she'd be up with breakfast on the table. And I never lost sight of that. Like that always struck me how hard she busted her ass for me.
Yeah. And she sounds like such an extraordinary woman. Like hearing it, I've had goosebumps through a lot of what you've been sharing and just, like,
oh yeah.
And even like imagining, you know, for those of us, like our own origin stories of like what kind of makes our world. I'm also struck by your storytelling and I'm like, feel like I'm getting a world of like you as a storyteller, which I want to explore after.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry if I'm droning on a little long here. I sometimes can get a little, wordy when it comes to talking about where I grew up, because I think you have to paint a picture, you know, literally have to paint a word picture over podcasts on like to see the place. Because, you know, when I tell people I grew up in Southern California, I think most people assume that I was always made for this Hollywood life.
Yeah.
I grew up in the shadow of, you know, the Disney lot, and that's not what happened. You know, like for me, and I could send you this map. I always joke about this. Like when I started to finally get of age where I can try to find a way to break into the business, you have to keep in mind that like where I grew up, we don't even have local news stations. They broadcast, they pick up the local news feeds from Los Angeles. But if you were to get in a car from where I grew up, from my hometown, to drive to one of those local news stations, it is a 4-hour round trip drive. And I think that helps to show people like, that's how far removed this little podunk town is from like the big flashy Hollywood lifestyle of Los Angeles, even though, you know, geographically it's not that far away. And I think that, like, tell you about, you know, the first job I ever got in the business, just to give you a reflection of like how hungry I was. I got a job at a regional theater in a place called Thousand Oaks. That is 40 minutes past Hollywood on a good day. It's an hour past Hollywood on a bad day. So I was driving 50 miles one way. Sorry, I was driving, let me put it this way. I was driving 5 hours and 160 miles round trip every day just so I could work on a local production of Cats.
Oh my gosh.
Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cats. And as a young man of color growing up in a rural environment, that was obscure, to say the least.
And so like
the only thing that I could, only paid internship I could find. And it paid me just enough to cover the cost of gas. Definitely didn't cover my time costs. Definitely was a huge opportunity cost. But every day that I got in that car, I thought to myself, you know what? This is going to be my elevator pitch one day. 5 hours and 160 miles every single day just to get to a regional production of Cats. And it also gave me a ton of time. The other thing it did, aside from me sort of thinking about the way that I could tell my own story, the other thing that it did was it taught me how to have conversations with myself, to workshop the stories in my head. You know, any filmmaker will tell you that you spend a lot of alone time doing that, but I had 5 hours every day that was dedicated to me just thinking, paying attention while driving, of course. I don't want to perpetuate any bad Asian driver stereotypes, but you know, the fact that I had that dedicated time to concentrate.
Yeah. You know,
I'll cap it up by saying, sure enough, that next year when summertime rolled around, I heard an executive speak from the Walt Disney Company. And after he spoke, there was a long line of people who were talking to him to try to pitch him on getting a job. And I walked up to him and I said, you know, Mr. McNeil, I drove 5 hours and 160 miles every day last summer from San Bernardino to Thousand Oaks for a regional production of Cats. Imagine what I could do if you let me work on Grey's Anatomy. And sure enough, man, that was a man named Tim McNeil. And he got me my shot, my first internship. He put in a good word for me. That summer, I started the Walt Disney Company. And to this day, Tim and I still talk on the regular, whether it be on social media or, you know, in person. He sets me up on all kinds of things. And that was damn near 10 years ago.
Unconventional Life family, would you like to take your life and business to the next level? This November, we're bringing together 100 entrepreneurs, thought leaders, creatives, influencers from all around the world in Bali, Indonesia for our five-day Life and Business Accelerator. We were ranked by Inc. magazine as the top event for entrepreneurs to attend in 2018. And literally imagine coming together in paradise, on the beach, toes in the sand, learning from some of the best and brightest in the industry while finally finding your tribe. You know, the community out there that sees you, gets you, and can really be there to support you, you know, in your vision. And these events, you know, more than anything, through the conversations people have, like passing, you know, on a walk on the beach or in one of our annual costume parties or dance parties, are literally conversations where people report bringing together five figures, six figures, even seven figures, you know, within days, sometimes even during the event. So if there is an idea that you're sitting on, if you're missing community, if you want to network out in paradise, go to unconventionallifeshow.com/Bali to get all the details. We're over halfway full at this point and looking forward to welcoming you all there. Say you're a listener of the podcast and we'll make sure to forward your application. Now back to the show.
Yeah, so wild. There's so many themes in what you're saying. I think the first that I want to highlight is just like for all of our listeners, like what it takes and the hunger and the drive to really unapologetically want something. And I know that so many of you that are hearing this, and I hear a lot of emails from you as well. Like it's this burning fire that you can feel in your belly, in your heart, and to really just be like, what I'm doing right now is not the end all. And frankly, it can suck if that's my view of it. Or I can really be investing in my time for like what this future iteration is. And I think the other piece I want to highlight is like the time. You know, like so many also tuning in, like whether you're going to your 9 to 5, the drive times, the travel times, it's like you can view that as just like dead time or as time that can really be there to workshop. And I'm curious, like, imagine your mindset and your willpower game is pretty strong. And it's like gotten cultivated through all these different pieces over the years. And, you know, I'd love for our listeners, like some of your practices and the ways and the things that you've learned to really keep your mental game strong and keep your focus, like in your visioning bigger and to keep dreaming and to keep playing and to keep creating. And so what do you do, or how has that relationship been for yourself, and any like tangible tidbits you could recommend for our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first of all, I really believe you have to work smarter and harder. So that's why I meant like all those times I was busting my ass to drive on that commute, I was still using that time for something else. You know, I had to be smart about the fact that I knew it would be a good way I could tell my story, but also be time for me to concentrate and workshop other projects in my mind and hone my skills as a storyteller in the echo chamber of my own car. And I think that that's very important to me. Like I'm always looking for ways to level up or sort of hack my way to use tech language into these spaces or that otherwise, you know, again, are difficult to get entry into. Suffice to say, like one of the ways that I did that when I was young, I heard David Geffen say that sports and music were the two quickest ways into legitimacy in the entertainment business. And so I made it a point, because I was a big sports fan, to like pursue that. And sure enough, you know, I was able to be in the room with folks with from LeBron or Kobe Bryant's camp, you know, very quickly, because I was able to, and as you know, like for LeBron James specifically, it was Spring Hill Entertainment and Maverick Carter, who runs business uninterrupted. You know, his business is he's quickly becoming one of the biggest producers in Hollywood, and so like that was a real leg up for me. The other thing that Mr. Geffen didn't know at the time, because it was, he couldn't have predicted it, is digital. The other thing that I did, aside from sort of fast tracking myself through the sports lane, was also through digital. While I was at the Walt Disney Company, every executive, whether they realize it or not, was telling me that I should be going to YouTube. And they were using YouTube as a proxy for digital media. You know, in 2010, it was really the only player. And I said, okay, digital video is going to be the way that I can get a leg up. And I thought about it in this very Promethean way. You know, another thing that I do, the second thing I probably do is actually I label a lot of the personal products I have or the missions that I have in my mind like I would like a film. So I called this the Prometheus Project. And I said, I was going to go to Silicon Valley. I was going to learn digital media. And then I was going to bring the fire back to Hollywood like Prometheus the Titan did. And sure enough, you know, I came back to LA after working for YouTube for 2.5-3 years. And Fox was looking for producers who were A, young, B, diverse, and C, new digital media. And I checked all three of those boxes. Yeah. And then like the third thing that I would say also is, you know, danger sharpens. That has been my mantra for a long time. If you are in a situation where you're forced to succeed, you know, another way of saying this, where pressure makes diamonds, you just become that much sharper. You know, what is sharper than a diamond? And then the last thing I would really say is that you have to be able to visualize, I think, a moment that you want to step into. And I think that like, visualization, positive psychology is something I think about a lot. As a religious person, you may call it faith, and I'm a religious person. And so I would consider that to be a big part of, you know, my belief system. But if you don't, if you're secular, I think the principles still apply, you know, positive psychology, visualization. You know, in my bathroom right now, when I hop out of the shower, the first thing that I see every day is a security pass for the biggest pitch meeting I ever had in my life a couple weeks ago. that's pasted on my mirror. And I see it every single day. And I wish I could talk about it more. I can't because it's because of the confidentiality around the project. But it's, you know, a big budget feature film that's potentially working with one of my heroes. And the meeting, straight up, depending on how this goes, I'll tell you how it went, you know, some other time. But this meeting was like out of a childhood dream. Like, it straight up was like the way that I pictured it as a kid. And so if I was picturing it as a kid and I had fulfilled that version of my vision, then the next version of it is actually making the movie. And so I took the security pass and I posted on my mirror and I said, okay, now it's not just getting in the room or having, you know, a legendary filmmaker tell you that he enjoys your writing or they enjoy, you know, they enjoy your storytelling. It's making it happen. And so I'm visualizing myself wearing that badge for this next meeting that we have in a couple of weeks. And I'm visualizing myself wearing that badge for the next 2 years as we make this movie.
Yeah. So good. You know, the visualization is also one that I use as a big technique. You know, we do these international business and life accelerators where we bring together all these entrepreneurs and creatives from different parts of the world. And we've got one coming up in Bali for 100 people at the end of the year. And one of the biggest things that I focus on, and we focus on, is really like visualizing, you know, one, what it be like to be in that moment, but two, like, what are all the little micro milestones along the way? Like visualizing micro milestones. And it's kind of like what I hear you saying as well. Like, I find sometimes when I talk to people about goal setting, it's like you visualize something that's so deep out in the future that it almost becomes like hard or impossible to visualize, because like 10 or like 100 steps would have to happen in between now and then. And when you get to kind of go back and break down these micro steps and just visualize, okay, how do I get to this moment? And then to that moment, and then to that moment, you not only does it become more attainable, but I find at least you get more in touch with the reality of what actually is, rather than the imagination of what it could be by the time you get there. And so, hearing that, it also just like, it turns on some of my own practices as well.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a very powerful thing, you know, and it's sort of counterintuitive because we live in this era now where digital media is sort of the medium of our generation. And we, as much as an Instagram or a tweet or something like that can help be that visualization, it's also just extremely powerful to have the tactile feeling of it. You know, a hard copy security pass, you know, print out a picture of the gram. You know, that sounds foolish to think about, you know, like that we're kind of going backwards and, you know, turning grams into Polaroids. But like, I think that there's something, you know, visual is not just, when you think about imagery, it's not just what you see, it's what you smell, it's what you feel. And like, you want all that to be part of the total experience that is, you know, engendering in your mind what the drive is going to be.
Yeah, totally. I love that. So, you know, one of the last themes I want to touch on here, and this is the theme that I call, it's nonlinear reality creation. And that's one of the things that I love about the unconventional life, because conventional wisdom in so many ways teaches us, you know, we go to school, we go to college, we start really low, we work our way up, and eventually over time, maybe we'll get promoted into a place and then we eventually die. And that, you know, philosophy, I think that's why when I love the show and why I love conversations like this, where there's just so many infinite ways, not only just to make and earn a living, but to essentially create the world you really, really want, not the world that you're just kind of inherited to have. And it seems like with your story, like if I imagine being you starting with like the production company, you know, at the offshoot of Cats, to then being in these rooms and having these conversations, like there's been a way in which you've been able to make time happen in a very different continuum rather than say like a conventional trajectory. And I don't know if that resonates for you, but I get
curious. Totally does.
Yeah, this theme of like nonlinear reality creation. I think we all have the capacity to access it. It's how you can make unbelievably epic shit happen like so quickly. And so what's your relationship to nonlinear reality creation? How do you feel like you've done it like really briefly? And I guess from the lens of like, for those that are listening to this that are like, Justin, okay, you've done all this stuff. It's only been 10 years. Like, what's the secret? Like, how can I access my own version of that? Like, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, I could tell we're cut from the same cloth because I think I've been thinking a version of that without using that terminology. So, you know, now I'm going to steal it and take all the credit.
You're welcome.
None of the blame. I believe my version of it has been the law of discontinuous change. And in a tech sense, we call it, you know, step function change, which is things happen not because they happen, it's because you make them happen. And when they happen, it doesn't always happen, yeah, as in like one step at a time. You make these very big jumps and these big leaps. And I think always about, yeah, what's the goal and how do I work backwards from the goal to take those leaps? You know, and something I hope that we have a chance to talk about is sort of our work specifically on underrepresented communities. But if you are any underrepresented community, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. King is probably someone that we've all looked to at one point in time in our lives as an inspiration. That's not to say that he was the only inspiration. Obviously, you know, he had his own flaws. But for Dr. King, one of the things that really stuck with me as a kid is when you read his letter from Birmingham jail, which is where, like, you know, Dr. King kind of became Dr. King. It's like his like Michael Jordan moment, or he became when LeBron became LeBron, when Jordan became Jordan, you know, when Tiffany Haddish became Tiffany Haddish. This is the moment when Dr. King became Dr. King. You know, he sort of talks about how like time is objective, right? So time is remote in a sense. Like, it doesn't change things for you. You can't expect to have equal rights in his context by just listening to people who say to you, wait, you know, it'll come. You know, like, wait, black man, you could sit at the bar one day. No, you got to take those things. Another way to put it in the Game of Thrones sense, you know, is power is taken. It's not given. And I think that you have to not just work backwards from your goals. You have to think about what are the ways that you're going to achieve them with real risk. You know, in the Dr. King sense, they were risking their lives. And he ultimately, you know, Dr. King paid the ultimate price. He was killed for his beliefs. You know, in the Game of Thrones sense, you know, in the Game of Thrones sense, a lot of people died. Spoiler alert.
Totally.
But in the Game of Thrones sense, it's like you may have to sacrifice everything that you believed in for many generations to achieve something that you think is going to be greater for yourself and depending on your mission statement, by extension, the people that you're trying to help out.
So good. So I want to move into this, your mission, really. And I know you've got your production company, yeah, J-School, and the focus of that, and would love to just highlight on that a little bit, because I think it's also something, you know, as a theme where, you know, as millennials, as creators and doing really epic, amazing things in the world, like having the impact and like the bigger why to be connected to, not only matters to me, like I get that it matters to you and also to a lot of the listeners. So I'd love to hear about the intersection of that and just share, you know, with everyone a little bit what's going on there.
Yeah. So J-School's mission is to empower underrepresented people to tell their own stories in their own voices. And if you were to bold, highlight, underline any part of that, it's own stories and own voices. And I want to make that distinction there because I think right now we're at a point in time where people recognize that diversity is profitable. And there's a feeling I think that I have for me personally where I don't think I've been able to work with a lot of companies where they not only value diversity from a revenue standpoint, but truly want to tell a first person narrative with people who are behind the scenes that have leadership behind the content that fully represent the identity of the audience from top to bottom. And I'll give you an example of that. And by no means do I mean want this to seem like a shot. Like I don't make a habit of taking pot shots at other people. You know, I like to focus on myself, but I think this is a particularly well put example. The Mulan live action movie is so important to the Asian American community, but the director and the writers of that film are white. And I think that that's really troubling for me, you know, because I think for me, I ask myself, why, first of all, why didn't you hire me? Come on, Bob Iger, give me a call. Holler at your boy. No, but I'm not even equipped to direct that kind of movie, frankly. It's not my jam. But why isn't there more leadership on that team that is Asian or Asian American? And so I think that for my company, what I really want to do is I want to empower each one of these groups to be able to tell their own stories in their own voice, because those stories deserve a first person narrative. They deserve I statements, not they statements, because they've been they for a long time. They've been otherized a long time by the people, the very same people who are now trying to make money off of them. There's a lot of people trying to make money off of people of color, women, the LGBT community. There's a lot of people trying to make money off of them because they see that niche is the new mass market. And if you want to create really tribal content, you have to target these already existing cohorts. And so for me, the difference between what I'm doing, what others I've seen do, is I'm willing to say to myself, look, I don't live the trans experience, for example. You know, I can research as much as I can. I can enable myself to tell the story. You know, God knows I have a fair amount of trans friends. But that's still a version of me saying, well, I got a friend. Like, I got a black friend, therefore I know black people, right? Yeah. I got a trans friend, therefore I know the trans story. No. I believe those stories need to be told. And there are projects I'm working on where I'm not the director, I'm not the writer on purpose. And if I get a producer credit, I'll be the last producer credit. And I'll draw a line in the sand, stand firm and say, make me the last person credited on this. Because the people who need to be the first are the people who are actually telling this story from their own lens. And I won't name any names, but if you look across the space and you look at a lot of these projects, you know, like the first name up there is still a white man's. And you're like, why is that? You know, why is that the case? And part of it you can argue is convention, because that's the way, you know, the people who give you the money and who are the bigger name go first. But that's a hustle, right? Convention is a hustle. Convention is women can't vote. Convention is people of color are indentured servants, you know? And I think that what I'm driving at here is that if the only reason why something is not happening is because it's never been done before, because it's not conventional, well, then I think that that's a very ugly outcome for these marginalized communities who are now all of a sudden paying attention to us. You know, people are starting to pay attention to our stories. And I just really am passionate about like putting the driver's seat, I mean, putting the reins in the hands of people who can really tell them in their own voice. And I won't beat a dead horse anymore by saying that, you know, like for me, there are a number of projects I'm working on where I can tell the story because I'm an Asian American, or it's a more broad story about men of color. But as a cisgendered heteronormative man who also has been very lucky that for most of my adult life, I've lived in economic privilege, there are a lot of people out there who I'm hoping that I can help, and I'm hoping that I can elevate. But again, as someone who is going to like lift them up and stand on the bottom of that pedestal, not on top of their shoulders.
Yeah, totally. I love that. You know, and the words, you know, even like the mission of your company, it's like own stories and own voices, like your own story and your own voice, your own voice, your own story. Like those words keep playing back and forth for me. And, you know, I'd love to, before we just jump into this rapid fire round, like end with the question there, of like for someone that's hearing this, it's like, okay, Justin, like I know I have a voice and I know I have a story. And I'm not exactly sure like how those two intersect or how I even get to have a platform for my voice or my story. Like what's like one quick thing you'd say to someone that might be finding themselves there right now of like, what's that step that they could take, like pause this interview right now, like get into action, like feel like empowered to like get out there in the world. Like what would you say to them?
Well, yeah, you know, let me just mansplain for a moment here. Look, I have a policy, and I, after, you know, learning under Adam Grant, someone that you probably have engaged with before, you know, I have a policy of if you email me, I will email you back. It might take time, and I swear it's not for lack of effort. You know, I work late into the night just to clear my inbox so people don't feel like, you know, I'm a dead end, because I've been there before. I've emailed so many people and never gotten a response back when I was just starting out. So a very tactical, tangible thing that you could do right now is email me at justin@j-school.co or find me on any social media at Justin R. Ching. And I'm more than happy to see if we can find a way to chat. You know, for sure we'll have a chance to chat, and then maybe, you know, there'll be someone else on my team who can speak to you more day to day. So that's one tangible thing.
So good.
I think one meta thing, and by the way, I really mean that. I'm very surprised. I say this to a lot of people, and like I'm shocked how few people actually reach out.
Yeah.
You know, like they come to you afterwards or talk to you on social media, and then like they don't actually like send you their ideas. And I'm like so shocked by that, because I wonder if it's just like people are afraid that I'll turn them down. I don't know what it is, right? I don't know if it's just like there's something's getting lost there. So help me figure this out, guys. But I think one meta thing, one more abstract thing that you can do, is to really sharpen your skills. Like, I think that we're in an era now where if you have the ability, I think you'll have your opportunity to showcase it. You know, like there was a survey done amongst millennials that everyone thinks they're going to have their 15 seconds of fame. It's no longer 15 minutes, it's not 15 seconds, but they think they're going to have it, you know? And I think with the disruption of the internet and the removal of these barriers to entry, I think that you're going to have an opportunity to find an audience and showcase your ability. And then you'll hopefully meet people like me who will empower you to get into the rooms. You know, I think that like that part I actually worry less about. What I worry more about is sharpening skills.
Yeah.
Because we're at a point in time where everyone's rushing. And I don't like this false narrative of like millennials feeling entitled and that we want everything, you know, instant gratification. But I do believe the truth in the fact that there's maybe been less time spent on mastery of things and more spent on getting the opportunity itself. And so I don't want to sound like an old guy here and say like, you know, wait your turn. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying wait till you know that you're ready. And when you get out there and you have your shot, you are fully confident in your abilities, and that you don't feel like you're going to risk any exposure. When I had my meeting with insert here, anonymous, big budget, you know, legendary film director, and his company a couple of weeks ago, like I like did not feel like I was out of place, because I felt very confident that I had built a really strong skill set and I had a foundation to stand on. One of the ways I'll say that you could do that very tangibly now, Guillermo del Toro was one of my favorite filmmakers. He'll say that filmmaking is like being an alien who's come to Earth to study humanity. Mm. As in, you've come to the Earth to see how humans act and behave, both in terms of emotional truth, like what is love and how does that feel? What does heartbreak feel like? But also very basic things, like how does a human hold a fork? You know, like you can watch sometimes when people do these very basic things because they're acting and you're like, that doesn't look like a human being. That looks like someone who's an actor. Everything is a mirror. When you're a professional storyteller, everything's a foil. You take a walk to the restaurant, you think about your story, you come back, maybe something from that restaurant lent itself to your story. Literally, I walked to a poke shop one day when I was trying to figure out how to fix like a third act twist on a script. And going to the poke shop gave me the idea of fish, and fish led me to something else. And that led me to the answer. And that sounds absurd, because what I'm not trying to tell you to do, I want to be very clear here, I'm not saying that if you go out into the world and you will happen to walk into a fish shop and that'll give you all the answers. No, I'm saying that you've obsessed over the idea enough and you've looked at the world as everything being a mirror to your storytelling and to your maybe specific story that you're looking to tell. And eventually you stumbled upon something that actually gave you an insight that you wouldn't have otherwise thought before.
Yeah. So good. I feel like you and I could just be chatting for hours. And like, I'm like, and we'll need to have podcast.
So much of this is going to get cut for time. So much of this.
So good. But what I will say is, you know, my last real question for you is, yeah, what does living the unconventional life mean to you in just a few words or a sentence?
Oof. What does the unconventional life mean to me? Living your best life. I know it's a meme now. It's a Cardi B meme. So I don't want to sound cliche, but live your best life. You know, convention again is built upon things, especially if you're an underrepresented group or a marginalized group, convention has been built upon things that meant to keep you out and keep you in your place. Be loud, live your best life. That to me is what being unconventional is.
Yeah, so good. I love that. I know you shared just a few minutes ago about how people can stay in touch, but I'd love, you know, for those that want to follow some of your work, follow some along on some of your projects, you know, learn about J-School, like where's the best way for them to be in contact?
Sure. You can go to my website, our website, I should say our, you should go to our website, j-school.co.co, j-school.co. Again, you can follow me on social media at Justin R. Ching. And the unfortunate part about the timing of this specific podcast is I have three projects that are in various states of development, but none of them are, unfortunately, I'm not able to talk about them yet, nor are they airing yet. But eventually I will have something to share with you. If you want to look at my past work, you can go to Amazon and watch Ritual. And then on my website, there should be links off to everything else, which is not gated by a SVOD paywall. So
totally.
Not that I'm against SVOD paywalls, but
so good. And we'll definitely have to have you back for a follow-up when we've got some more projects that we can share about. And it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. And I agree. I totally feel like we're cut from the same cloth. And I know I got a lot of insights for me, you know, in this segment, and really just, you know, for all of our listeners, you know, just as a reminder, it's like sometimes it can feel so easy to be this lone wolf, you know, like you're in your own world, in your own community, and the people directly that you're around, it's like, who gets me? Like, where are my people? Like, I feel like I'm on this island and I've got these visions, I've got these goals, I've got these dreams, and no one else can hear me. And I just want to emphasize, like, you are not alone. Like, you have community, you have conversations like this, people like this, conversations like this exist, and just to keep going. And so it just feels important to highlight. And Unconventional Life Fam, a lot of awesome content coming at you guys in the future. So lots of love. And Justin, thanks so much again.
Thank you.